CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This segment of our show, Carmen Tiano and Sydney Banna will be telling us a little bit about GTA injured workers. So, can you tell me a little bit about GTA injured workers and your connection to disabilities work?
Yes, GTA, what we do is our organization is dependent and it is a non-profit. At no-cost services that are available to groups, individual, in person, or by telephone. And we assist injured worker with WSIB claims, okay, up to the appeal level.
So what that is, Cam, a worker... It's Carmen Tiano. I'm on their board of directors. So what they do is a worker has an injury and they need some information. They go into the office or by phone and Sydney will provide information. Now, we also assist people who say have an issue that's not work related but need to apply for CPP disability, EI sick. So the office actually... helps them fill out the forms, etc.
Yeah, so we basically provide general information, education, and advice, and we put into it, and we also make recommendation to, you know, specialized support, like to the work advisor, legal aid, or health and safety association, and counseling professional services.
Yeah. So how do you go about reaching out to the affected population? How do you let people know that your work is available to them and you can be a source of support?
Well, through the local MPPs, prior to COVID, we would do information sessions. We would have an information at the local library. We would go through, say, COSTI organizations in the area, the city councilor. The problem with reaching out to a lot of groups, the office cannot do any kind of legal information, legal work. So that's always a trade-off, right? You have funding to provide summary advice and information, but when it comes to, say, like actual representation or legal work, so like say if there's someone that's been discriminated against for housing as a result of a disability, that is something we can't do. So it's a little bit, the more people we would get out to, sometimes the more people we would disappoint because the work we can do, we really can't do the advocacy that many people need.
So what are some of the most common barriers that you are able to provide support with in your work?
Well, Sydney, give some examples of when workers come in, especially in the with injuries in the say, Asian community.
Yes. So when the worker, most of our worker here, especially with the Asian, simply because I'm Vietnamese and I speak Vietnamese. So we have a lot of the Vietnamese plant workers that are unable to speak English and don't understand this policy. So they come in and I assist them, you know, not only with injury, the claim with WSIB, but sometimes with, you know what, communication with the employer, problem with their, you know, managers, CPP, low income application, unemployment, and etc. Because they have no other resource to go to other than our center.
So do you find that the community is typically welcoming and responsive when they do find you, that they're glad to have you in their corner?
Yes, they do, because this is word of mouth, right? And we're non-profit, especially because most of these injured workers make minimum wage. You know, they can hardly afford their rent.
Yeah, and the other thing that happens, if you're from a group that, say, if you're, when English is a second language, you're a newcomer to the country, you're within your group, you're working, you're doing everything, it's minimum wage, but it's honest work. You're already from a group that already has certain barriers. Then, say, now you have a workplace injury, and most of the time you're working in areas where the employers aren't the best corporate citizens, when they don't want you to report. During COVID, Sydney had numerous cases. Workers were being forced to go to work when they had overt signs of COVID. These workers were terrified to even tell their boss.
Yes, they're terrified because they might get terminated or fired from their job.
Yeah. You know, even the simple thing of someone being given a mask, a proper mask, they would ask. It was just terrifying. Now, can you imagine that environment? You're going to be reporting an accident, or you're going to tell your employer, I need modified work. Or God forbid, you've been diagnosed with a non-compensable illness that you need some accommodation. It's sometimes Sydney's in a real tough spot.
So doesn't that create a substantial risk to the other workers? If you're going in and you have COVID symptoms, wouldn't that just create a risk in the work environment?
It does.
Yes, it is, but they don't have the ability to say no because they're afraid to lose their job, Cameron. So what do you do at this point? What do you do?
So
if you were the worker, you know, especially with Asian, don't speak English, they're terrified losing their job, and you know they do what they were told. They don't understand their rights. So what do you do in this situation?
Yeah, and Cameron, sorry, and she brought up a good point. And the other thing that happened during COVID. In certain communities, not only Asian, Southeast Asian, Carmen comes from a part of the world. Carmen is sponsored by his brother, as an example. You go work for in an environment, but now Carmen, his brother, sister-in-law, and maybe a cousin are all working there. Carmen comes in, asks, has an injury or wants some kind of accommodation during the COVID, not only will it affect Carmen's job, it could potentially affect every other family member who's working there because of Carmen's just simply trying to exercise his rights. Sydney's had that situation come in, especially in the manufacturing, little small manufacturing. Very troubling, very difficult, but very, very disheartening that happens.
So, how were you able to support these workers during this time?
Sydney, tell me about your contacts that you would get them in charge with the ministry, employment standards, some of those examples.
I try to support them as much as I can because you understand, because I can only assist them to a certain level. Like, you know, for example, a good example, sexual harassment. Okay, there was an Asian injured worker, you know, verbally abusive from her manager, operating manager, to the point she's so stressed that she can't continue going to work. So she, you know what, I cannot represent her because she wants to, you know, bring the case to human rights. So I can only refer her to like legal aid services because we can't represent injured worker when it comes to legal matter.
Or, but sometimes, Cameron, what Sydney does do, she will reach out to me, who's on the e-board, and then I would, for an example, when it came to COVID, I would provide the information and go, here's who you call and at the Ministry of Labor Skills Development for COVID. If there's an employment standard situation, here's the number, here's a clinic that can help you. With that sexual harassment one, we did end up referring it to the Asian legal clinic. That there's a legal clinic. That one actually ended up working out. Or sometimes, especially during COVID, we would go to the local member of provincial parliament in the area to try to get some kind of recourse. But again, unfortunately, as you're well aware, when it comes to certain disability issues, the supports are few and far between. Every agency is dealing with scarce resources, right?
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes.
In this segment of our show, Chance Furnett will be telling us about Echoing Hope. So, can you tell me a little bit about Echoing Hope?
Yeah, Cam, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing it. Such an important series of talks that you're having here about issues that affect our community. So, yeah, thank you for having us. Echoing Hope Ranch is a 10-acre ranch located in southern Arizona. We're about 20 miles north of the international border with our brothers in Mexico, brothers and sisters in Mexico. We service about 45 individuals now that have autism, intellectual, or other developmental disabilities. And we focus primarily on the adult portion of that population. So the ranch is a 10-acre residence and a working ranch. Our individuals actually live and work and make an honest wage out here keeping our ranch as a functioning ranch. And so we also have a food-to-school program that the people we serve actually work in the field and then take that produce to the schools, the local area schools, have provided informational sessions on what to do with this fresh produce, and then talk about the importance of knowing where your food is from. So we are a ranch-based agricultural program devoted to adults with intellectual disabilities and autism or developmental disabilities.
So how do you reach out to the disability population to let them know that these programs exist and this might be a good fit for them?
So it's a ranch setting, so it's not for everybody. We have a heavy marketing presence. We do a lot of strategic outreach into larger communities throughout Arizona, but really our approach is word of mouth. Through the state, we are entirely state-funded. Most of the folks that we serve come to us through references, and they come as far away from Massachusetts and Wisconsin. They come from all over, and they seek a program specific to agricultural and residential settings. And if they like us, we actually start the process to get them self-funded so that they can get the subsidies that they are qualified for and make sure that they are totally independent, paying for these bills on their own and not coming out of the pockets of family members or their wages.
So do you find that as ranch workers, individuals with disabilities bring a meaningful contribution to the work?
100%. So what it really teaches us to reflect on how things can be done differently. Not everything is done in the same way. And in a ranch, ranch work is hard. And each year is a different challenge and a different problem, and you learn as you go. And it's the same thing. We try to take a kind of a caring approach where if they have a different way of doing things and it still comes around to getting done in the same way, we're good with that. But agricultural-based work we find to be so important with the individuals that we serve is because It teaches them about self-sustainability, self-sufficiency, and the importance of knowing where your food comes from, knowing how important it is to eat a healthy diet. And so it's all-encompassing, and it kind of sells itself.
So I'm guessing that being out working in nature, harvesting produce and whatnot, would have a sort of a calming mental health impact, especially on those with autism.
Definitely. And this is a beautiful setting that's out here, and we also have a full working barn, and the barn animals only serve therapeutic purposes. It's not like a full working ranch in that respect, but we do have a full barn, and they work with the animals, and that has got a therapeutic purpose. We have a mechanics bay that they are taught how to perform regular maintenance on their vehicles, and then we still have our gardening and ag work, and what we find is that having opportunities to earn an honest wage is the most important thing. Not everybody loves ranch work, but the ones that do, from working the earth, knowing about the cycles of the seasons and what we grow and when, and it really helps put together just a full understanding that we are all one organism working towards the greater good.
So when you mentioned that they deliver some of the food to area schools, do you find that there's typically a positive community response to having persons with disabilities coming in, having these talks and providing the food?
You know what, 100%. For us, we're in a very rural area, and so opportunities for fresh produce in the southern Arizona Sonoran Desert are few and far. We live on a pretty lush piece of land right along the San Pedro River here. So we have a unique situation where we are able to provide produce for the community that they would not ordinarily see or receive. And so it is highly welcomed. And then on that, the other component is we find with the younger generations of children that they are very much more accepting and hospitable to our individuals with disabilities. And when they have early interactions, and if they're not living in a bubble, interactions with the people that we serve, that helps to get rid of some of the stigma that is attached to these individuals. And we start the children early to know that these are individuals just like you and me, and they deserve opportunities just like that. So it's a two-way street. We're providing produce, teaching about the healthy importance. We're also trying to combat that stigma as well.
So in your time with Echoing Hope, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
There have been many individual success stories. As an organization, I think we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot. We've been around for 10 years. I think that we kind of have to take a new approach. Congregate settings aren't exactly what is kind of being recommended by industry standards, and it is shifting away to kind of going away to more in-home-based services, more independent living arrangements. So I'd say one of our biggest accomplishments is kind of reshaping our vision to start providing options for activities and community interactions for the individuals we serve. So we only have about 15 residents. We have 44 individuals that we serve throughout the community. And now we're beginning the process of, instead of bringing them to a congregate setting where they are only with each other and other paid staff to be with them, we're actually going to their homes, talking with their parents, presenting a list of options of what we can do that day. And so we're using our staff in different creative functions to more incorporate community into their lives. So that's a big accomplishment for an organization. We still have a lot of work to do on that. But I would have to say on an individual front, we have an individual that we serve who actually was able to, the school system down here failed him, as it does many of the people we serve. And we were actually able to kind of work with the school district down here to make sure that he could still finish his coursework and be graduating on time. And just recently, our friend did graduate high school through our program that we started from scratch just about 2 months ago. And so we're super proud of him and proud of him for that. And anytime we see an individual leave the ranch for their own independent lifestyle, their own apartment, their own job, we consider that that's our mission. That's what we're here. That's what we're here to do.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Carmen Tiano and Sydney Banna told us a little bit about GTA injured workers. And Chance Frenette told us a little bit about Echoing Hope. In this segment of our show, Corey Bainton will be telling us a little bit about KPP. So, can you tell me a little bit about KPP?
So, KPP comes from Kawartha Participation Projects. We are an agency that provides personal support work and housing to clients in Peterborough, City of Kawartha Lakes, and in Northumberland.
So, how do you reach out to the disability community to let them know that your work exists?
Most of our sort of referrals come from social workers and primary care physicians, nurses, a lot of the times at the hospital. The hospital here in Peterborough especially is very aware of what we do. And when there's patients there who are going to be needing support when they get home, they're reaching out to us to see if we have, you know, housing and supports depending on what's needed for that particular patient at the hospital. We also participated community activities and things. And right now I'm sitting on the board of the committee for Council for Persons with Disabilities as well. So that helps.
So when you say you provide personal support workers, what are some of the common challenges and needs that the clients tend to have?
Sure. So there's a range of needs that our clients have, of course. Some people require full support to live independently in their own homes. They need help getting out of bed, having a shower, getting dressed, taking their medication. And then with that also meal preparation and some tidying up of their homes. Then there's also clients who just require minimal support. It could be just medication reminders or just help with having a shower or getting dressed, sort of smaller tasks. And then the rest of the day they go about on their own. With those clients, we tend to, only go in at prescribed times throughout the week. And, they're on their own the rest of the time. The clients who require more support, we do have a paging system within our supportive housing location, so they can page at any time if there's an emergency or they need help going to the bathroom or something like that.
So, in terms of supportive housing itself, mm-hmm. Do you ever do any modifications to a space to make it more accessible?
Absolutely. Right now we're working on, just to give you a real example, we're working on some flooring in a client's unit. That client has Huntington's disease and sometimes, falls are becoming risky. So we're working on some flooring to make the floor more flat throughout the whole surface of the apartment, and it's also anti-slip. So that's presumably to help him to not fall as much. We also put in things like grab bars, overhead lifts. Some occasions we've even widened doorways for higher lifts or wheelchairs.
So, in your time with KPP, has there been any success you've experienced that stands out for you?
Oh, sure. I mean, we've navigated through the COVID pandemic. Right now, the numbers in Peterborough are high again, so we're in another upswing, but we've now navigated quite successfully through the COVID pandemic, trying to manage, people's freedoms and also requesting that people stay home and stay safe and keep the staff safe because our clients and staff are very at risk. So I think that, no one's gotten really, really sick, and that's been a huge success. And then we also have other successes where in the last 6 months or so, we've successfully taken three patients, ALC patients, or alternative level of care patients from the hospital, and housed them at KPP units. So those clients were living in hospital for, you know, over a year each, and now they have their own apartment and they're living independently with some support from us. So that's a huge success for me as well.
So I'm guessing for those clients you mentioned, being in an apartment setting versus being in a hospital would tend to have a huge mental health impact.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I'm sure there's still some residuals from being in hospital and then, you know, the stresses of COVID and all that. But they're a lot of, all three of them are real happy right now to have their own place, and they have pride of the place that they live, and they work hard to be able to stay where they are and not have to go back to hospital. So, which is amazing for them. It's wonderful for me and for my team, and then also great for the medical system that doesn't have that. It's just three less people in hospital is a good thing.
So if you could send any message to the community about the importance of your work, what would you say?
I would say that community-based programming is hugely important, and sometimes gets forgotten, I think, by the hospital system and maybe the government, that when we reach people in the community, at the community level, then we're preventing things from getting worse. We're preventing those mental health struggles or physical struggles from becoming a real drain on the system and drain on society and people themselves. So the little things that we do in the community that provide entertainment, health care, you know, in people's homes is hugely important to people's overall well-being, and then as a whole, society's well-being.
So, do you find the communities typically well receive your work? Do you find that people are enthusiastic about the idea of, yes, I have a disability, but I can still live on my own and function as a productive member of the community?
For sure. I think, when I talk about those successes that we've had, people get really excited and they're, you know, proud of the work that KPP does and other agencies in the community. And I think, of course, you know, staffing and funding are the barriers that we're hitting that are, really frustrating parts of it, because if we could expand more with more funding and staff, then we could help more people and help the system as a whole, you know, overall as well. But people love what we do and appreciate what we do. Yeah.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
My friends, I'm both baffled and appalled by the fact that these workers were forced to go in, create a risk to their colleagues, all because they were living in that sense of fear, sense of duress. Truth is, stress and anxiety can create even worse problems, case of someone who's already struggling with a health condition. During COVID, we all experienced some of these things. The fear of what was going to happen next. Questions of, will I get it? Will I be alright if I do? Truth of the matter is, these workers showed a great diligence, but they should not have been forced to put their lives at risk. Yes, they need to work like the rest of us, it's very true, but they don't have the right or the responsibility to put others at risk when something like that's going on. And any employer worth their salt would understand and say, we'll find a way to support you, we'll find a way to be there for you. Don't add to your existing problem by throwing in extreme anxieties or mental health concerns on top of it. Fact is, we were all dealing with it together. No one was exempt from the idea of needing a little help. But as a community, we've continued to stand strong in these times. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks.
We'll see you next week.